Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is For the Record program number 263, being recorded on November 26th of the year 2000. It's titled, If Music Be the Food of Love, Munch On, Part 2. This is an extension of a series dealing with German corporate control over the American media. This broadcast in particular will focus primarily on music. The hypothesis that I've been presenting for some time in this series might be difficult to understand. I advise people who are new to the broadcast to get a hold of the other broadcasts in this series from Spitfire. That's a tape duplication service, which, time permitting, I'll tell you about later in the program. Suffice it to say that I think those broadcasts will help to get you up to speed if, in fact, a lot of what I say might seem puzzling or incomprehensible, and I can appreciate that for a newer listener. In the last update on this subject, which was For the Record program number 261, we took a look at the deal that was swung between Bertelsmann, the main firm that we've been looking at in this particular series on German corporate control over the American media, and in particular we were taking a look at Bertelsmann's deal with Napster in exchange for a nice chunk of capital and basically dropping their suit against Napster. Bertelsmann and Napster, or Napster is now going to hook up with Bertelsmann, the third largest media company in the world. One of the aspects of the Bertelsmann-Napster deal, which is fundamental and which should not be overlooked in this context, is the potential political and espionage applications of the peer-to-peer technology, which lies at the core of Napster. This basically permits hard drives to deal with one another, and in exchange for various CDs that members of the Napster group are or club are interested in. This peer-to-peer technology not only will have a lot of applications in the business marketplace of the 21st century, thus putting Bertelsmann in a good position in that regard, but also the peer-to-peer technology is something that Bertelsmann CEO Thomas Mittelhoff envisions as a vehicle for distributing all of Bertelsmann's product on the net. We're going to take a look now at an article that we looked at in number 261. This is from Business Week magazine's issue of November 13th of the year 2000. This article about the Bertelsmann-Napster arrangement is entitled A New Net Powerhouse? And it's authored by Jack Ewing. The article subtitled Bertelsmann's Deal with Napster Could Kickstart a Bold Plan for the Media and Entertainment Giant. And this deals with the Bertelsmann-Napster deal. In a sidebar to the article about the Bertelsmann-Napster deal, which was codenamed by the Bertelsmann executives Project Thunderball, there is discussion of Andreas Schmidt, the CEO of Bertelsmann's e-commerce group. And as I noted in the past, something which is interesting, possibly significant, but certainly quite ironic. A high school dropout, this is about Andreas Schmidt, he's the fellow who swung the deal for Napster with Bertelsmann. A high school dropout, Schmidt built his first career with Germany's border police. And skipping down, he turned to journalism after an accident with a practice hand grenade damaged his hearing and made him unfit for border duty. And he then jumped to journalism and in a very short time was head of Bertelsmann's e-commerce group. I think it's interesting that the executive who swung the Napster deal for Bertelsmann had his hearing damaged by a practice grenade. I also wonder whether perhaps Andreas Schmidt might be part of the underground post-war SS contingent, originally tabbed for border duty, but then channeled into another aspect of what I call the underground Reich's operations. And I mean that quite literally. The Third Reich did not disappear at the end of World War II, but went underground, and using the huge capital at their disposal, that looted from occupied Europe, and with the enforcement capability of the SS, they basically have perpetuated themselves in a very effective mafia-like fashion, and the perpetuation of mafia power over the decades, it would be a good paradigm for people to examine in terms of understanding how the Bertelsmann and Underground Reich dynamic could become a reality. In the sidebar about Andreas Schmidt, the head of Bertelsmann's e-commerce group, it discusses the fact that not only does Bertelsmann plan on becoming number one in e-commerce, which does not guarantee, by the way, its control of the workplace, but that the Napster peer-to-peer technology is something that Thomas Mittelhoff wants to use to sell all of the company's content on the web, and that's not all. Skipping down in this particular sidebar by Jack Ewing, with Napster, Schmidt is executing Bertelsmann's grand plan. Middlehoff wants to make Napster a platform for selling all of the company's content, including Random House books and magazines like Inc., that's INC. But Schmidt must find still more ways to push Bertelsmann products on any kind of digital device available, from electronic books to Palm Pilots to mobile phones. He's certain to use Bertelsmann's massive financial clout to acquire more internet upstarts. So again, note that the peer-to-peer technology in the Napster platform is something that Middlehoff plans to use to market all of Bertelsmann's product on the net. And not only that, but note the following of Bertelsmann and the Napster deal. Jack Ewing writes as follows in Business Week. Speaking of Middlehoff, he is lending Napster a modest $50 million to stave off a cash crunch and may take an equity stake later. Napster will use the money to develop technology and services designed to get users paying for music rather than stealing it. If Napster delivers, Bertelsmann will settle its copyright infringement suit against the upstart company and urge other media companies to do the same. And this next aspect is very, very significant. What's more, Bertelsmann wants to cooperate with rivals and turn Napster into a platform for downloading the whole spectrum of media products, including books, films, and magazines from all companies. Please note this sentence, and I'm going to repeat it for purposes of emphasis. What's more, Bertelsmann wants to cooperate with rivals and turn Napster into a platform for downloading the whole spectrum of media products, including books, films, and magazines from all companies. I would note that if, in fact, Bertelsmann is successful at this, this basically would put Bertelsmann in a position to perhaps utilize some sort of InSlaw-like or Promise Software-like trapdoor technology to gain intelligence on what people are using in terms of books, music, what they're thinking. This technology could be a huge vehicle for basically gathering intelligence on people with regard to what sort of media products they use, and would have tremendous political applications as a result of that. Not only is Bertelsmann itself a major player in the world media market, but if in fact this hypothetical situation were to become a reality and Bertelsmann were to offer Napster to rivals, then that would put perhaps Bertelsmann in a position to gather intelligence on who's reading what, who's listening to what, and who might be thinking what. And in light of the Third Reich SS Bormann background of the Bertelsmann firm, hence its inclusion in this series, that should give people pause to think. If in fact Bertelsmann succeeds here, it's going to put them in a position to learn an awful lot about what people around the world are reading, thinking, listening to, etc., and that could be of great use for any future above-ground Nazi government. I'm also going to repeat an aspect of this story that we looked at last time. An inveterate networker, speaking of Thomas Middlehoff, the head of Bertelsmann, an inveterate networker, Middlehoff can draw on some long-standing personal connections to further his cause. One of Hollywood's newest music moguls is a close friend of Middlehoff's, Jean-Marie Messier, whose Vivendi is about to acquire control of Seagram's Universal Movie and Music Groups. Middlehoff sits on Vivendi's board, so he's going to be in a position to influence Vivendi as well. Again, one of the major aspects of the Bertelsmann deal is the peer-to-peer technology, the Bertelsmann Napster deal is the peer-to-peer technology that Napster has pioneered and that Bertelsmann hopes to utilize, and that again is significant in and of itself. If in fact Bertelsmann is successful at offering Napster to rivals, that quite possibly could put the Bertelsmann firm in a position to gather a tremendous amount of political and cultural intelligence about what sort of media products people are buying and consequently what they're thinking about. With regard to online music and the explosions that have taken place in the industry as a result of the generation of that technology, an interesting item appeared in the business section of the San Jose Mercury News of Saturday, November 25th of the year 2000. This is an AP story by Hans Greimel, G-R-E-I-M-E-L. It's Dateline Frankfurt, Germany. Headline, German fee on CD burners hits HP. Subtitle, Law aims to crack down on web song copying. The article reads in part as follows. Computer giant Hewlett-Packard Company had become the first company to be snagged by a German law requiring firms to pay fees for making CD burners that are being used to illegally lift the latest hits off the web. The case sets the stage for other European countries to possibly adopt similar rules to stem an epidemic that cost the music industry an estimated $5 billion last year. But analysts blasted the agreement reached Thursday as another example of Germany's notorious thatch of regulations. The manufacturers are scapegoats, said Robert Labatt, a new media analyst at research group Gartner. It's the individual works of art, books, songs, and videos that need to be protected, unquote. Many of Germany's neighbors, including France, Italy, and Greece, have similar laws meant to protect authors and musicians by nailing makers of equipment used to violate copyright laws. But the laws date back decades and focus on devices like tape recorders and video players. The German case against Palo Alto-based Hewlett-Packard extends Germany's pre-existing law into the digital age, when such things as CD burners, computer printers, hard drives, and high-speed modems make it easier to copy and transfer copyrighted items. I would note that the German fees on CD burners, which can be used to lift music from the web, also places Germany in a position of shoring up its deal with Napster, because obviously this particular fee is going to move to restrict the free accessing of music from the web. But on the other hand, Bertelsmann, having gained the inside track with Napster, may very well put Bertelsmann on the fast track to become the pioneer in marketing Napster peer-to-peer type arrangements with regard to music and other product on the web. I do think it's interesting that German corporate law is placing restrictive fees on CD burners at the same time that Bertelsmann is moving in the direction it's moving in. One wonders if perhaps there's a connection between these two actions and whether perhaps the aim is to further enhance Bertelsmann's control over music and the German corporate control over yet another important element of mediated experience. That's not something that I would state definitively. It's what I call food for thought and grounds for further research. I do think that the Bertelsmann-Napster arrangement is interesting to contemplate in light of the recent German ruling against HP with regard to CD burners. As discussed in For the Record program number 261, the last update on German corporate control over the American media and also worldwide media, the Bertelsmann firm had sworn, or Thomas Middelhoff had sworn, to make Bertelsmann number one in music by the end of the year. I noted that the EMI merger with Time Warner was negated by the European Commission, and now, indeed, Bertelsmann and EMI are in talks, which, if they result in a successful merger of the firms, will make the new combined Bertelsmann-EMI company number one in music. They do not dominate world music, such as the way the Bertelsmann and von Holtzbrinck firms dominate American publishing, but it will make them number one. Of the Bertelsmann EMI talks, the Financial Times of London writes as follows in their Tuesday, November 14th of the year 2000 edition. This is an article by Bertrand Benoit in Frankfurt and James Harding in London. It's headlined, Bertelsmann and EMI in New York Talks. Thomas Middelhoff, Bertelsmann chief executive, and Eric Nicolai, N-I-C-O-L-I, chairman of EMI, are expected to meet in New York today to try to hammer out the terms of a deal to create the world's leading music group. The plan, which emerged last week, would see Bertelsmann, the privately owned German media group, inject BMG, its music business, into London-listed EMI. Bertelsmann would need to pay EMI shareholders a cash dividend in order to obtain a majority in the merged business. People close to the negotiation said they hoped today's top-level meeting could yield an agreement on the amount of this cash dividend. Bertelsmann is understood to have set a range of £1 to £2 per EMI share as a basis for discussions, meaning it could pay up to £1.6 billion or $2.28 billion in cash. The level of the cash payment, though, will depend on the valuation of BMG's assets. People working for Bertelsmann, which aims to secure a 50.01% share in BMG EMI, said this preliminary figure had raised interest among large EMI shareholders. They said an initial agreement could be reached by the end of the week at the latest. What we need now is a handshake at the top level so that we can go ahead and present the deal to investors, unquote, said one negotiator on the German side. But we need to move as fast as we can if we want this to happen, unquote. By the way, I would add that there are still some regulatory hurdles to be cleared successfully before the merger could take place, although those regulatory hurdles are seen as being less obstructive than they proved to be for the EMI Time Warner deal. And again, I've noted the European Monetary Union as the realization for the pan-German theoretician Friedrich Liszt's plans for an economically united Europe and politically united Europe under German domination, for unseating Great Britain as the dominant power on Earth. That plan has now come into effect. The only difference is that Great Britain is no longer the dominant power on Earth. That is the United States. More about the Time Warner EMI deal and its greater chances of clearing European regulatory scrutiny. Meanwhile, the two groups are understood to be willing to consider the disposal of some record labels to assuage antitrust concerns in Europe and the U.S. Depending on the recent performance of Universal Music Group in the U.S., where it has had great market success with acts such as Eminem, a combined BMG-EMI group would be market leader. However, they do not expect the deal would face the kind of obstacles in Brussels which dogged the proposed $20 billion combination of EMI and Warner Music, the music subsidiary of Time Warner of the U.S. On Warner EMI, the European Commission raised concerns about vertical integration, the strength of the music business backed by Time Warner's combination with the internet giant America Online, as well as worries about its market share. People on the German side insisted that the issue of management was secondary, given the, quote, friendly, unquote, nature of Bertelsmann's approach. And again, note one of the keys here, although this will be officially a merger, people working for Bertelsmann, which aims to secure a 50.01% share in BMG EMI, said this preliminary figure had raised interest among large EMI shareholders, so control would be maintained by Bertelsmann. More about this possible deal from the Wall Street Journal of Monday, November 13th of the year 2000. This is an article about the EMI Bertelsmann deal. It's by Charles Goldsmith in London, Martin Piers in New York, and Brandon Michener in Brussels. It's headlined, EMI Bertelsmann Deal Seen Workable, and this reads in part as follows. A merger of the music interests of Bertelsmann AG and EMI Group PLC would attract antitrust scrutiny, but is unlikely to pose as many problems as the aborted merger between EMI and Time Warner Incorporated's music unit, say music industry officials and people close to the negotiations. Bertelsmann and EMI on Friday said the German company had approached EMI about a possible combination of Bertelsmann Music Group, or BMG, home of Whitney Houston and Sarah McLachlan, with EMI, whose roster includes the Beatles and the Spice Girls. But the companies cautioned that there was, quote, no assurance that a transaction will result. And skipping down, Bertelsmann said it didn't make an offer for EMI, long the subject of bid speculation, even though Bertelsmann could afford it given its war chest of 30 billion marks or 13.2 billion. Instead, Bertelsmann is proposing to combine the businesses while maintaining control of the new operation by compensating EMI. The amount remains open to negotiation to reflect the greater value of the United Kingdom company. People familiar with the situation say one scenario being discussed calls for BMG to be, quote, backed into, unquote, EMI, so the combined operation would retain EMI's London Stock Exchange listing, a person close to the talk says. And skipping down, people on both sides of the talk say that last week's resignations of two BMG executives, Chairman Michael Dornemann and Chief Executive Strauss Zelnick, would make a possible EMI-BMG merger far tidier. People close to Bertelsmann said the company wouldn't necessarily insist Bertelsmann executives take the top jobs in the new company, so long as the German company had a veto over who did. Earlier this year, Bertelsmann merged its European television interests with those of Pearson PLC of Britain and Belgium's Audiofina to form RTL Group, and Bertelsmann was happy for an Audiofina executive to take the CEO job. I would add that Audiofina is actually controlled by a Luxembourg-based holding company, which is one of the major epicenters of operation for the Bormann Flight Capital Group that I've discussed at considerable length, and time permitting we'll touch back on at the end of this particular broadcast. So note that even though this will officially be a merger, it would appear that Bertelsmann is going to retain the control if in fact the deal goes through. It is proceeding along and moving toward consummation, but it's a long way from clearing the regulatory hurdles and being finalized. The LA Times of Friday, November 17th of the year 2000, carried the following story by Chuck Phillips, and indicating how close the merger had come. Bertelsmann and EMI on verge of a merger deal. British music giant EMI Group is on the verge of accepting a merger offer from German media conglomerate Bertelsmann, sources said. The pact, which must first be approved by EMI shareholders, is expected to be announced within 2 weeks, possibly as early as Wednesday, sources said. Representatives for the two corporations have been working around the clock in New York trying to hammer out the details of the merger under which the privately owned Bertelsmann would fold its BMG record division into the London-listed EMI. And note that even though the deal is seen by some as imminent, there are still some regulatory hurdles to be cleared. The Wall Street Journal of Friday, November 24th of the year 2000 has an article by Brandon Michener and Philip Shishkin, datelined Brussels, headlined, "Regulatory Fears Hinder EMI Bertelsmann Courtship." As EMI Music PLC and Bertelsmann AG talk about merging their music businesses, regulatory concerns are high on their list of sticking points, and who can blame them? And then it goes on to talk about the problems that Time Warner and EMI encountered with their deal. Note that the Bertelsmann EMI deal would face a much smaller regulatory degree of regulatory opposition from the EU. And note that if, in fact, that takes place, that would make that company number one in music sales. And since Bertelsmann would retain corporate control, that would make Bertelsmann number one in music. And in combination with Von Holtzbrinck, they dominate American publishing. Yet another corporate merger that might very well increase Bertelsmann's influence with regard to the book industry in the United States. This with regard to e-books and book sales as opposed to publishing. This story was reported by a number of newspapers, including the New York Times of Saturday, November 25th of the year 2000. This is an article by David D. Kirkpatrick. It's headlined, "Book Chain Talking Deals with Gemstar," subtitled, "Media Giant May Link with Barnes & Noble." The bookstore giant Barnes & Noble confirmed yesterday that it was in talks with the media and technology company Gemstar TV Guide International Incorporated about a range of business deals, including a possible merger. Skipping down, although the talks are extremely preliminary, a merger would probably entail Gemstar's buying Barnes & Noble. Gemstar, a technology company with high profit margins and explosive growth, has a market value of $19 billion and had about $241 million in revenue last year, while Barnes & Noble has a market value of $1.8 billion and recorded annual revenue of $3.5 billion last year. The discussions have covered ideas from a partnership to promote the use of Gemstar's technology for reading electronic books to the more remote possibility of a full-scale acquisition of Barnes & Noble. Such a deal would raise the prospect of an incongruous alliance between two very different entrepreneurs and their companies. If reading electronic books becomes popular, a considerable uncertainty today, a merger would create a company with enormous power over the future shape of the book business. And note that roughly 50% of BarnesandNoble.com, Barnes & Noble's online venture, is owned by Bertelsmann, and that gives Bertelsmann a say in online book sales in the United States, and note that that's distinct from publishing. People who are new to this program may be wondering why I am concerned about German corporate control over American media. I'm going to review some information that will be well known to veteran listeners, but in light of the fact that there are people who tune this program in for the first time or one of the first times and are wondering what in hell I'm worried about here, the scenario that first set me to scrutinizing the control over the media was advanced in a Nazi tract called Serpent's Walk. This book was authored by someone who writes under the name of Randolph D. Calverhall. Although it is ostensibly a novel, it's about the SS going underground after World War II, building up their capital, and then buying into the American opinion-forming media, and then taking over the United States in the mid-21st century. This book is published by National Vanguard Books, the same publisher that puts out the Turner Diaries, that was the role model for the Nazi terror group The Order and also for Timothy McVeigh and company in the Oklahoma City bombing. And I believe that just like the Turner Diaries, this book is actually a manifesto, a blueprint for what the Nazi movement is doing and not just the novel that it appears to be. The back cover of Serpent's Walk describes a scenario as follows. It assumes that Hitler's warrior elite, the SS, didn't give up their struggle for a white world when they lost the Second World War. Instead, their survivors went underground and adopted some of the tactics of their enemies. They began building their economic muscle and buying into the opinion-forming media. A century after the war, they are ready to challenge the Democrats and Jews for the hearts and minds of white Americans who have begun to have their fill of government-enforced multiculturalism and, quote, equality, unquote. And again, this book is supposedly a novel, but events in real life are bearing an ominous similarity to what takes place in this particular book. With regard to corporate Germany, as we've noted in the past, and as we're going to cite again, the Third Reich basically went underground at the end of World War II and using the huge amount of capital that they looted from occupied Europe and then secreted into 750 corporate fronts in neutral countries, they basically retained their political influence in the post-war period, and the enforcement power of the SS combined with that economic muscle basically put the Martin Bormann Flight Capital Organization into a dominant position in post-World War II Germany. And that is discussed in the landmark text about the Bormann Organization entitled Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile, authored by Paul Manning, who describes the Bormann Organization's economic control in Germany in 1981, as follows. By the way, the book published in hardcover by Lyle Stewart. Atop an organizational pyramid that dominates the industry of West Germany through banks, voting rights enjoyed by majority shareholders in significant cartels, and the professional input of a relatively young leadership group of lawyers, investment specialists, bankers, and industrialists, Martin Bormann is satisfied that he achieved his aim of helping the fatherland back on its feet. To ensure continuity of purpose and direction, a close watch is maintained on the profit statements and management reports of corporations under its control elsewhere. This leadership group of 20, which is in fact a board of directors, is chaired by Bormann, but power has shifted to the younger men who will carry on the initiative that grew from that historic meeting in Strasbourg on August 10th of 1944. That, unlike Serpent's Walk, is not fiction, and it sounds very much like what's discussed in Serpent's Walk. Two more articles from The Nation magazine. This from The Nation magazine of December 28th of 1998 about the Bertelsmann firm, Bertelsmann's Nazi Past by Hirsch Fischler and John Friedman, of Bertelsmann's work in World War II. Issuing more than 20 million books, Bertelsmann was the largest supplier to the army and supplied the SS. And of the patriarch of the firm, Heinrich Mohn, Mohn had forgotten to mention that he had been a passive member of the SS. And I would also note that the Nazi past of Bertelsmann would not appear to be all that far in the past. Skipping down once again, referring once again to an article from The Nation magazine of November 8th of 1999. This is about the house historian for the Bertelsmann firm, a fellow named Dirk Bovendam. And for those who might think that the SS background of Patriarch Heinrich Mohn is in the ancient past, listen to this. Speaking of Dirk Bovendam, Bertelsmann's house historian, his book Roosevelt's Way to War, Roosevelt's Weg zum Krieg, was published in 1983. Rewriting history, he stated that Roosevelt, not Hitler, had caused World War II. He also wrote that American Jews, quote, controlled most of the media, unquote, and he claimed they gave a false picture of Hitler. And skipping down, in a second book, Roosevelt's War, published in 1993, reissued in 1998, Bovendam accuses the U.S. president of enacting a plan to start World War II. In the same book, he suggests that Hitler's threats in early 1939 against European Jewry were a reaction to Roosevelt's strategy against Germany. Bertelsmann in control of American publishing and rapidly moving up in music. That concludes For the Record program number 263. If music be the food of love, munch on. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.